How can a man, the mind become free through inquiry? The whole philosophy of the Yoga Vasishtha, if one can call it so, or the whole philosophy of philosophy, is this, that our lives are governed by ideas. We do nothing, that is not based on some idea or the other. Many of these basic ideas have never been examined by oneself. We believe that those ideas have somehow been established beyond all reasonable doubt by somebody or the other. Technical ideas have been scientifically proved by scientists, and other humanistic ideas have been equally well proved by somebody or the other, some academic. And spiritual and philosophical ideas have also been proved by some teachers, some prophets and some gurus and things like that. Maybe. But as far as you and I are concerned, they are mere ideas and nothing more. So that if our friend tells us what the distinction is between the ego and the superego, we all nod our heads so very, very intelligently. But the nodding may merely prove that the neck is all right, nothing more. That we are not suffering from a stiff neck. It cannot be an indication that what he is talking about is clear to me. To him it is truth, to me it is an idea. And this is the crux of the whole discussion. Our action, our life, and therefore the mind, which determines all these, the action and the life and so on, are bound to this idea. The idea being non-truth, non-reality. Is that clear? It's not unreal, it is real as an idea, but as the reality is non-real, non-reality. Immediately you turn the attention, your attention, or your awareness, or whatever it is, upon this phenomenon, he says there is a distinction between the ego and the superego, and you want to understand the distinction between the ego and the superego, and there is only one way of doing that, and that is to look into yourself to discover what the ego is and what the superego is. It is quite possible that you may come to the same understanding as his. In any process of investigation, not analysis, investigation or inquiry, is a bad word, but looking directly within is what is meant. In any such investigation, the most important factor is not to assume what you are going to discover. That is, you are not aiming at the discovery of the truth concerning his statement. Or you are not trying to prove him true or prove him untrue. We are not looking at the conclusion at all. He says this: there is a distinction between the ego and the superego, and you say, all right, let's try it. And you get from him all that he can give you, which will definitely be translated into ideas by you. You get all the ideas that the book has, that he has, that everybody else has. And without any prejudice whatsoever, if you are very careful, the answer is there itself. Without any prejudice whatsoever, which means without assuming what the result is going to be, which means even as you are investigating, even as you are looking into it, the looker, the observer is free, and there is freedom. You may eventually come to the understanding that he is right. You may eventually come to the understanding that he is right up to a point, but perhaps even he has not looked into it in this way. But you are free. You are free. You are freely observing this whole phenomenon. You are freely observing this whole phenomenon. I'm not worried about the phenomenon at all. This thing is new and this is most beautiful. Freedom. So that it is, I'm suggesting that it is even possible that you abandon the whole wretched thing halfway without going any further. Is the superego real or is the ego real? Is the relationship real or is one better than the other? None of these. I am quite happy. There is a blissful freedom. What happens from there on happens. But can you express that? Can you communicate that to somebody else? No. Because when he listens to your description of it, out of that description he is going to manufacture an idea of freedom. And therefore you can't, nobody can understand that statement unless you have passed through this yourself. What is freedom? What is detachment? And only when there is this, shall we leave it at that without describing what it is, only when you reach this is there friendship. Because once you have learned to, how would you say that? How would you put that? Free your mind, you're hopeless. Once this freedom is discovered, it is then that you are really free to be friendly to all. It is then that you are really free to be pious, to be virtuous, to be noble, to be humble, to be divine, everything, anything you want. You are not constrained, oh, you know, she's such a nice person and she has come all the way from Sydney to be here. I must be friendly to her. Hello, my dear, how are you? Oh, my God. That is not friendship at all. That is, I don't know what it is. It is not even hypocrisy, it is something worse.
When people do come to death realization, and they like yoga the system, and they like, they want to share it somehow, they want to be
Quite right. It is not, they are not expressing their awareness. They are not let's put it this way. We don't know what they are expressing, whether they are expressing their awareness, whether they are expressing their enlightenment, whether they are expressing... But only this much is clear, they are saying something, and when you and I read it or listen to it, the mind immediately makes little ideas out of it. And when even the word friendship is mentioned, the first time I flew from Sydney to Dubbo. Yeah, there is a place called Dubbo in somewhere near, not far from Sydney. I had to go there for a Rotary Club meeting. They said, it's a friendship flight. I thought the idea was that it is sort of some kind of a friendship club or a few friends chartering this flight. Then as I neared the plane, I suddenly saw the friendship marked on it. It is the brand name of this little aircraft. It has nothing to do, nobody is friendly with nobody else. It is just the... It is from then on I discovered another great truth, that prestige is the name of a pressure cooker. There is nothing in the world which is called prestige, which can be proved to be prestige, except pressure cooker. So all these words suddenly lost their meaning. So friendship, if I'm a primary school student, tiny little child, friendship? Hey, what kind of ship is that? So, these things have no meaning at all, as ideas, as words, absolutely no meaning. Having picked up these teachings from these books, one has to discover them within oneself. And in order to make this discovery, as we have already seen, you must be free, otherwise you run along a beaten track. People like this beaten track, especially the thing called rut. It's a very beautiful thing. Because once you get into the rut, you can go to sleep. I mentioned this earlier on some occasions. I don't know if you were there. I have seen this phenomenon when I was small in our village roads. When we used to ride in bullock carts. The village roads were dirt, muddy, and so after the heavy rain, deep ruts used to form, and they would solidify when the rain stopped. But it was delightful. I've even seen bullock carts transporting goods with the rider sitting in front and sleeping, fast asleep. He can go fast asleep because he was quite certain that the bullocks could do nothing. They had to move along the rut. That is what we want in life. We would love these ruts because once the thing is slipped into that, you can fall asleep. Things will move. This is the glory or the convenience, the advantage of working on ideas. They form ruts. And you roll along that rut, that groove, you feel quite safe and quite comfortable because you can sleep. But you are trapped there I'll give you a personal experience. Probably I won't make it very clear, but I'll make it as clear as you need for the present. This happened to me soon after I had been posted to Delhi. I was working in Calcutta and I was transferred to Delhi. I had to go to Simla on official duty. And of course, even though the trains were very crowded those days, it was during the wartime, very crowded, my seat was reserved, and so I wasn't keen on going to the railway station too early. And the office servant had brought a horse cart, tonga, in Delhi. That is what we used in those days. And because I had told him that I don't want to go to the station too early, he had calculated the time and come to pick me up. And we left the South India Club where I was staying. As we were going into the old city, Delhi, which is horribly crowded, suddenly I looked at my watch and this man realized that he had miscalculated. He didn't anticipate that bottleneck. We would miss the train if we had gone into that crowded part. And so he asked the driver of the cart, "Oh, take this longer route, which is sort of freer, with less traffic." And we took that road. And the horse galloped and galloped and galloped and galloped. It was marvelous. We would get to the station well ahead of the departure time, and suddenly it came to a dead halt. Complete halt. There is no mechanical failure. There is. And immediately I was surrounded by a few people. I don't want to go into that. And this man was terribly worried, and the driver was worried. He was trying to whip the horse, poke the horse, and do all sorts of things, but it wouldn't budge. Till both of them got out of the cart and started dragging that horse, literally lifting that horse and dragging it away. When we had gone about 100 yards away from that scene, the horse started running again, very fast. Well, the other thing is not who and where and how we got stuck, it's not necessary. Now, the horse and that cart had been accustomed to taking passengers to that particular spot every day, every night. And therefore, the horse only knew that. That was the rut. That was the routine. That was the habit. And so the horse took the cart right there and stopped. So far as the horse was concerned, we were supposed to get down there and move. And if the passengers didn't get down, the horse wouldn't move. That's what happens to us very often, very, very often. Though this happened to me only once. Psychologically, this happens to us millions of times. This is the truth, this is not the truth, this is the mind, this is the body, this is that. This is good, this is not good, this is friendship, this is not friendship. I was talking to her just now. I've had a very interesting letter from a good friend. It seems that in a certain highly spiritual organization, the master had an enormous crowd of disciples who split into two halves. One half getting extremely interested in parapsychological phenomena, spirit communication, communication with the masters and all that sort of thing. And another half was a bit skeptical. And the master suddenly threw his weight in favor of the first half the psychics. They were the psychics, and they who did not believe were kicked out. They got the kicks. It's not bad. And the psychics prospered. And then one fine morning, it is a fine morning, that's the whole trick. The weather was good, everything was good. And the psychics disappeared from the master. Poor thing. But while this so-called friendship prevailed, it was called friendship, but it was a tight grip. If you want to be my friend, thou shalt. Now, we have more or less committed ourselves to this philosophy, to this idea, that if you are my friend, my friends become your friends, and my enemies become your enemies, and my relations become your relations, and my God becomes your God, and thou shalt not look over my shoulders and wink at someone else. Isn't that what friendship means to you? Is that what? This is how we get trapped everywhere, every morning, every afternoon, every night. We have a perfect description, definition of all these virtuous qualities. Truth means this. I may not mention the sect by name. There is a very powerful fundamentalist sect to which a whole family in Durban belonged, in South Africa. And the young boy, who also belonged to the sect, publicly denounced his mother for adultery. And it resulted in all endless heartaches. And when someone asked him, what is this? He said, no, I am sworn to truth. And so when I found out that my mother was adulterous, and I had to, why don't you read the other one, honor your father and mother, and leave them alone? We have that neatly packaged idea of what virtue is. And when the mind is trapped in this idea, it cannot think of anything other than that. Such a mind is unfit for any sort of inquiry. Because even if the mind undertakes an inquiry, it turns round and comes to the same point, like that jolly little horse. And that is not an investigation. An investigation which takes the result for granted is not an investigation. That's your motto, isn't it? Give us the truth even if it hurts.
No.
What is it?
There is nothing higher than the truth.
Yeah, that's a French proverb. No, I think there is nothing higher than truth. Or is it commented upon by one of the theosophists? I've heard this.
There is no religion higher than truth, actually.
Yeah, that's true. But let us have the truth even if it hurts. That's our definition. But there is another cliche. Give us this truth even if it hurts. Where have I seen this?
I've heard.
Hmm?
It's
I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's a sort of, there is no religion higher than truth, but probably somebody has sort of expanded it in that fashion. Yeah, sure. You cannot, the respondent kept quiet only because you cannot possibly communicate truth. You can communicate, you can express espresso coffee and call it truth. But to the other person, it's only an idea. Unless that person also enters into his own investigation of this truth and the truth shall make you free. The truth shall make you free first from me. That's what nobody appreciates. The truth shall make you free from me first, from the person from whom you hear these words first. He is kicked out of your consciousness. If, for instance, as you are listening to this, if you try to discover the truth of these words in yourself, that very moment I go out of focus. I must. It's only then that you are able to investigate without a hang-up. Otherwise, you are following my rut or somebody else's rut. And when you are following a rut, the awareness moves outside and you fall asleep. That is the essence of Buddha's approach to this investigation. Unfortunately, even in the case of Buddha, we have come to well-classified material. Terrible. Virtue can be marvelous, fantastic, and circumscribed virtue is not virtue. It's some kind of a compulsion, slavery. And when virtue arises from this freedom, that's something very beautiful, very, very, very beautiful. Friendship in freedom is something fantastic, indescribably beautiful. When neither of us uses the formula thou shalt, because you are my friend, you must. Terrible. Then the other person is scared. And there is no friendship. There is no love. There is no affection. Nothing. And in the same way, if you are constrained to speak the truth, ensure that your speech is kind and noble and truthful and loving, and you want to do something, therefore there are two distinct layers within yourself. One which is bubbling up, but which is kept under check because of your resolve. I must, and the other one, which gets expressed, because that is the most convenient thing to do. The other one is chewing for an opportunity to get out, sneak out, and this one is planning how best can I express myself without violating the resolve that I have taken, and sort of bring it into some kind of an alignment with the vow taken, with the resolve taken. So I let this go without really taking responsibility for it. That is called cunning. And we don't want to use this word cunning anymore because that word has been linked to fox. And we have invented a new word called cleverness. Intelligence, cleverness. He is very intelligent. I mean, my God, he's a crook. Don't go near him. Instead, if you are free, free yourself from either of these. You are free to bluff me, and you are free to be friendly. Go. Free yourself from all this, and then it is possible that you will be friendly. And you, even if you are not going to be friendly, at least I know where you are, where I stand in relation to you. Eh? Doesn't matter. There is no virtue other than in freedom. And only if this is understood, can we also understand this intriguing phenomenon which occurs in both Bhagavatam and even here, Yoga Vasishtha and Mahabharata in particular, which is considered to be history, plain history. How could such enlightened people have waged wars and yet they were supposed to be totally enlightened without any likes and dislikes whatsoever, no love and no hate. They didn't hate any being on earth. And yet they waged great wars? How is that possible? It is impossible for an unfree mind to understand this. We may use some sort of cliche, and we may use some sort of illustrations and things like that. But all those things would be totally inadequate unless the mind is trained to free itself from ideas. The ruts.
That's why Arjuna said to me, that is, Krishna said to Arjuna, therefore fight.
Therefore fight. Tasmat yudhyasva Bharata. But does it mean that we should fight? That's the whole problem. Therefore fight. What was the argument before? You are not the doer of anything, therefore fight. You are not the doer of anything, therefore fight. No, that's only a secondary explanation. First investigate whether there is choice. Do you have a choice? Okay, I have a choice. Is that an idea or is that true, that you have a choice? Or who is it that says I have a choice? The one that says I am going to do this and I am not going to do that. And what is that thing that says I am going to do this and not going to do that? Something which has been conditioned to the idea, again, that this leads me to heaven and that leads me to hell. So I will do this, I will not do that. Are this sort of heaven and hell realities that you know of? No. My grandfather told me that there is a heaven and you couldn't go there if you do this. Ayo, my God, the old man is not there for me to discuss it with him. And so that I could at least ask him, Father, do you at least, have you been there? Do you know that there is a heaven? You have to have faith. Where do I buy that faith?
You don't, but I mean...
Wait a moment. This morning over the radio I heard it is not enough to have faith. Yeah, some epistle from St. James, I believe, in the Bible. It's not enough to have faith. Faith is almost useless, something he said. Something, if you read, probably you'll understand. Yes. Faith is almost, I may be wrong in quoting, but faith is almost useless without works. Right. So, run the rat. So, can I merely blindly believe, have faith that there is a heaven I go to if I do this? And if while I am doing this I am inwardly tortured all the time, is that heaven worthwhile? And if while doing this, I am full of pride, full of ego. Is that heaven worthwhile? And then, if that faith is based on a fragment of the truth, it's like a floating on a raft. After the ship has been wrecked, in the hope that somebody will pick you up. Is that what we are after? Instead, is it possible to see that faith is a rut? And the whole thing needs a reassessment. There may be heaven, why not? What's wrong with there being a heaven? There may be hell, why not? If you want to see, you can go to Beirut now. Right now. So, if you want to go see hell right now, you can go to Beirut. Best Beirut. So, that is not a serious problem. But, the next step is, I have been told that there is heaven. And if I walk, if I do this, I'll go to heaven. And if I do that, I'll go to hell. Do I really want to do this and not that? Or do I want to do the other thing, but I don't do it only because he told me that I'll go to hell? If that is the case, then I am creating a hell for me right here. I'm struggling and struggling to not to do that and struggling to do this. That's hell already. So, all this is unknown, all this is pure speculation. All this may be true, very true. All this may be very true. We are not prejudging anything. But suddenly you realize that all this has been taken for granted. Heaven is taken for granted, hell is taken for granted, my duty is taken for granted, this thing is taken for granted, my pleasure is taken for granted. Is it possible for us to investigate this and see what is the truth in all this? Yes? Krishna, even the expression Krishna said to Arjuna is mere hearsay, unless you are about 5,000 or 6,000 years old. It's mere hearsay, okay. But that is what is printed in that book, and we read that. Good. But that is merely 1/4 of one verse in a text of 700 verses. Can I understand the whole sense of it? And if I study the whole text and put this little thing in the context, not only the text, in the context, then a new meaning emerges from that. Because the same text which in one verse says therefore fight, says elsewhere ahimsa. You must be well established in this virtue called non-violence. In another part it says, only he who sees his own self in all and all in his own self, he is alive, the others are dead. I can see my own self in him and yet fight with him. If so, what is myself? Is there a thing called myself? Is there a thing called his self? Then, instantly we go into that area where the me doesn't prevail, the me being the memory. All the teaching that has been stored, this way goes to hell and that way goes to heaven. I am no longer interested in either heaven or hell. I am interested in seeing how it is possible to see that as myself. Is it possible to see that as myself? That body is definitely not the same as this body. That mind is definitely not the same as this mind. His passport is different from mine. At what stage, in what sense, are we totally one? When you get there, you are not there anymore. Because if you are there, I am also there. As two separate, independent entities. If you want to find myself in you, you also must disintegrate. And then, it's a beautiful thing. Then there is a shocking verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Hatva visa iman lokan na karoti na lipyate. Even if he destroys the entire universe, he does nothing. Then you take a walk in the garden. Look at the patch, the vegetable patch, and you probably see this whole fun. Millions of living organisms, disintegrate there, fertilize the soil, something comes up, another living thing, and that blossoms, that feeds, and then this is it. Hey. Nothing dies. Nothing is really born and nothing really dies. And therefore there is no killing, there is no... When the garbage dump processes some living organism, that doesn't kill anything. That living thing gets disintegrated. What do you mean disintegrated? It becomes one with the soil. Then you are able to look at your own children and say, ah, you are here. I am here. I'm ready to go. You look at your own children and you say, I've seen you somewhere. 6 months before you were born. You came out of me. You are me. So I can go. Not that I am killing or I am being killed, that this is a sort of fermentation process that goes on in the universe all the time. But is it possible for this philosophy to be misinterpreted? Yes, of course. By stupid people, they will always do this. It is difficult to understand for an immature mind, and therefore, at once upon a time, the knowledge was kept hidden and imparted by word of mouth. All right, that seemed to work, or at least that prevented immature people from gaining this knowledge. But they who had this knowledge, they turned it into an idea, a philosophy, and marketed it. You want to learn Bhagavad Gita from me, you must come and you must offer all $10,000 and you do this and you do that. And then I will whisper the Bhagavad Gita into your ears. Nonsense. What? It's an open secret. So, heads I win, tails you lose. To be able to understand a teaching, one has to abandon the teaching and go right deep within oneself to see if the teaching makes sense. Sense in the sense that it becomes real, and that reality or the truth is freedom, and it must free the mind from its own ideas. When the mind is freed from its own ideas, in that freedom there is enlightenment or self-realization, insight, inner sight, inner light, or virtue or holiness. I'm not sure. You can use any word you like, as long as there is freedom. Freedom from the... Free the mind from its own ideas. Free the mind from its own ideas. From the ideas along which it habitually flows. Then there is instant holiness. Oh, terrible, 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 terrible. When, that is it. We are so completely tied to these ideas that normally it is impossible even to visualize a state of mind which is not governed by the ideas. But from our own deep sleep, there is a sort of hunch that there is a possibility of such freedom. And one has to work on that.